any threatening moves. That could change at any minute,
Utra'o warned.
No, Thrawn said. They could move to attack mode, but it would take more than simply a minute.
Agreed, Arulani said. At their distance and orientation, any move would be well telegraphed.
Utra'o seemed to brace herself.
Yes, ma'am.
The diplomatic office has no understanding of that which you speak.
A different Leo Aowen voice came over the speaker.
But we welcome the friendship and mutual respect of the Chiss Ascendancy. Will you approach, Ambassador, that we may have a conversation? Or shall we send transport for you?
Ilparg looked back at Arulani.
Admiral, he prompted. We were definitely not moving any closer, Arulani said. And under the circumstances, we're not letting you go in either.
So we're just leaving?
Why not? Arulani said. We've gotten what we came for.
Ilparg frowned.
What exactly did we get?
The presence of a Nikhajun ship, Thrawn said.
Which took no action against us,
Ilparg countered.
And the fact that the Leo Aoi don't want to talk about Urch, Arulani added.
Ilparg snorted.
I believe that's what's known as negative information.
It's still information, Arulani said. Regardless, it's all we're going to get. So offer your apologies, say your farewells. Feel free to translate that into diplomatic speak, and we'll be on our way.
A moment, Admiral, Thrawn said thoughtfully. With your permission, I'd like to run one additional experiment. Those 9 gunboats seem unusually interested in us.
Arulani turned her attention back to the group of small fighters they'd noted earlier. Their pincer formation had opened up a little, but otherwise nothing seemed to have changed. She felt her eyes narrow as she saw what Thrawn was referring to. The formation had opened up because the gunboats had suspended the maneuver they'd been in the middle of and were now drifting, their thrusters quiet. The tidal effects of the planetary gravitational field slowly moving them apart.
At the very least, they're interested in being able to swing into action at a moment's notice, she said. And in any direction.
Exactly, Thrawn said. And I see no reason, other than the vigilant, why they should suddenly be so watchful.
Arulani scratched at her cheek. The Nikhardun battle dreadnought was making no move, but the fighters were in ready position. Someone hedging their bets? Or was it something more interesting? Was it an indication that there were 2 different chains of command operating? Either way, it was worth exploring further.
I trust whatever you have in mind won't involve the discharge of weapons.
Not at all, Thrawn assured her. I'd simply like to tell them I'm here.
What do you expect that to accomplish?
I don't know. That's why it's an experiment.
She gave him her best strained patience look, but Thrawn's hunches were usually worth chasing down.
Very well. Helm, be ready to turn and get us out of here.
How quickly?
Octrimo asked.
Hopefully not very, Arulani said. It looks like they're trying to play innocent, and it would be nice to leave them thinking we'd bought their act. But I want speed and power in reserve if we need it. Skywalker Ciri?
I'm ready,
Ciri said. Her voice was shaking a bit, but the words were firm enough. Arulani gestured to Thrawn.
Ready?
Yes,
he said, taking a step closer to her command chair.
Watch the gunboats.
She nodded and tapped the comm switch.
Go.
This is Senior Captain Thrawn, Ambassador Ilparg's supervisor,
Thrawn said.
Thank you for your interest, but the ambassador does not feel prepared at this time for a full diplomatic conversation. The Chiss Ascendancy will be in future communication with you regarding this matter.
The Leo Aeon gave some kind of wordy but mostly meaningless reply.
But Aralani wasn't really listening. 7 of the 9 gunboats Thrawn had told her to watch had activated their thrusters at the mention of his name, moving out of formation with their bows, swinging toward the Vigilant. But they'd barely begun their maneuver when they abruptly throttled back, holding their new positions for another moment before dropping back into place with the 2 gunboats that hadn't left their orbits. The whole thing took barely 5 seconds, with all 9 ships back in formation before Thrawn even finished his statement. The half of her brain that was monitoring the conversation recognized that it was over. She tapped the comm switch again and nodded to Octremo.
"Take us out, Helm," she ordered. "Nice and easy and calm. Skywalker, stand ready."
She turned her attention to the battle dreadnought, wondering if its captain would now decide to drop his own innocent act. But the Nicardoon continued its leisurely orbit as the Vigilant turned and drove back out of the gravity well. Chiri leaned over her control board, and with a burst of star flares, they were back in the safety of hyperspace.
Wootro crossed the bridge to Aralani's side. "So what exactly did we learn?" she asked.
"You weren't watching the gunboats?" Aralani asked.
"You and Thrawn were watching them. I figured someone ought to keep an eye on the dreadnought."
"Yes, good thinking."
Aralani looked up at Thrawn.
"Your idea, Senior Captain. Go ahead and lay it out."
7 of the 9 gunboats reacted to my name by starting to move toward us," Thrawn told Wootro. "That suggests both that I'm known to the Nicardoon and that there's some kind of standing order regarding me. But a moment later, all 7 returned to their formation."
"So whoever was commanding the fighters was all set to come charging over and avenge the horrible insult you delivered at Rapark,"
Wootro said slowly.
"Only someone higher in the command chain countermanded the order."
"That's how I read it,"
Aralani confirmed.
"Which immediately implies in turn what I said earlier. Even under provocation, even with standing orders, they're trying very hard to pretend they're not a threat to us."
"One problem,"
Wootro said, lifting a finger.
"I thought we decided the gunboats were Leo Aeon. Why would they care about Thrawn? I mean, aside from the obvious."
"Not so obvious anymore," Aralani said. "Certainly after all these years, there can't be any standing orders concerning him. At least not from Leo Aeoi."
"I suppose not,"
Wootro said.
"So?"
"So we were wrong earlier,"
Aralani said, feeling a sense of looming dread.
"We thought the Leo Aeoi might just be learning new battle tactics. They are, but they're learning them under Nicardoon supervision."
"The Leo Aeoi and the gunboats knew the Nicardoon orders concerning me," Thrawn said. "The 7 pilots who reacted did so far too quickly for it to be otherwise. Detailed standing orders of that sort aren't typically shared with subjugated peoples. Furthermore, the gunships were armed. Their forward swivel lasers were visible, as were their missile ports. We know from Pakosh that the Nicardoon removed the weapons from their conquered peoples."
"Which strongly suggests the Leo Aeoi aren't Nicardoon subjects,"
Aralani said quietly, gazing out at the roiling hyperspace swirl.
"They're allies."
For a moment, none of them spoke. Then, Wootro huffed out a breath.
"Great,"
she said.
"So now what?"
"We need more information," Thrawn said. "Admiral,
Can you divert the Vigilant to Solitaire before returning to the Ascendancy?
Absolutely not,
Ilpark said firmly, striding up to them.
First the Leoaoan regime, now you want me to go to the Garwian Unity? How many ways are you trying to get yourself in trouble?
He turned his glare onto Thrawn.
Never mind you. How many ways are you trying to get me into trouble? I'm already far removed from my mandate.
Your position and mandate aren't the issues here, Ambassador, Arlani said, studying Thrawn's face. The Vigilant is my ship, and it goes where I order it. If I decide there's data to be gathered, I'm obligated to follow through on it.
Not if the Sindicure declares your decisions improper,
Ilpark warned.
If that happens, so be it, Arlani said. But even the Syndics have only limited authority over a senior fleet officer.
There should be only minimal trouble for either of you, Thrawn said. I can take a shuttle in while the Vigilant returns to the Ascendancy. That should add only a few hours to your travel time.
You don't want us to wait?
Arlani asked, frowning.
What if the Garwians don't want to talk to you?
I believe they will, Thrawn said. If I may ask a favor, Admiral, I'd like to borrow your office for the next hour or two.
Of course, Arlani said. Take all the time you need. Kekevithelius, bring Skywalker Ciri out of Third Sight as soon as it's convenient and safe. She's to then reroute us to the Garwian capital planet of Solitaire.
Yes, Admiral, Thalia said. She hadn't missed a word of the discussion, Arlani could see. But she showed no inclination to question the decision.
It'll be a few more minutes before Ciri can be disturbed.
At your own timing and judgment, caregiver,
Arlani assured her.
Captain Thrawn, my office is yours.
Memories. 7.
Thrawn shook his head.
Unacceptable, he declared. Completely unacceptable.
Ziara's years in the expansionary defense fleet had honed her ability to cringe on the inside without letting the accompanying emotion show in her face or stance. Nonetheless, this time it was a very near thing. A junior commander, even one who just received impressive accolades, never talked to a senior officer that way. It would serve him right if Bakhief slammed him right down to the floor. Fortunately for Thrawn, Bakhief had an above-average patience level.
Do I need to detail for you the protocols of preemptive strikes?
He asked, his voice calm.
No, sir, Thrawn said.
At least Ciara thought he got in a sir this time.
I simply don't see how it applies in this case. The ships were of Leoaoan design. They were using Leoaoan docking facilities, and they pursued us from the regime heartworld. It seems indisputable that the pirates are, in fact, under direct Leoaoan control and supervision.
Of course it's disputable,
Bakhief said.
The regime has categorically disputed it.
They're lying.
Perhaps,
Bakhief said.
But we only have what we have. Circumstantial evidence and an official denial.
So we allow them to go on their way unscathed, Thrawn persisted.
What would you have us do?
Bakhief asked.
Launch a full-scale war fleet to descend upon the Heartworld and destroy every governmental and military installation we can find?
Thrawn's lips compressed briefly.
It would hardly take an entire fleet, he hedged.
You're evading the point,
Bakhief said.
Let me make it clearer. Would you destroy property and condemn people to death for the possible actions? The possible actions of their government?
And what of our people? Thrawn countered. We've also suffered losses of property and life.
Those who inflicted those losses have been killed or punished, Those who did the actual deeds, perhaps. Not those who sent them.
Again, you have no proof.
Thrawn's eyes flicked to Ziara.
Then let me obtain it, he offered. Let me go to the regime as a merchant or diplomat and find a way into their archives. Official orders, or perhaps a clear line of plunder distribution.
Enough!
Bakeef snapped, his patience finally breaking.
Understand this, Commander, and understand it clearly. The Ascendancy does not attack other systems unless we have clear evidence that they attacked us first. We don't attack militarily, diplomatically, subversively, clandestinely, or psychologically. Those who do not attack us will not be attacked by us. Is that clear?
Very clear, General, Thrawn said,
his voice as stiff as his posture.
Good,
Bakeef said. He took a deep breath.
Now the other item I wanted to discuss with the two of you.
He glanced at Ziara, then turned back to Thrawn.
For your sterling performance in planning and executing the mission, Junior Commander Thrawn, you are hereby promoted to Senior Commander.
A touch of surprise crossed Thrawn's expression.
Two ranks, sir?
Two ranks.
Bakeef gave a little snort.
Yes, I know. But your success against the pirates has you riding high at the moment, and the Ascendancy does cherish its heroes. And of course, your myth.
Thrawn's face seemed to fall a little.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Bakeef inclined his head and turned to Ziara.
And you, Mid-Captain Ziara, are also hereby promoted to Senior Captain.
Thank you, sir,
Ziara said, her chest seeming to close around her heart. Senior Captain. One more promotion, and she would reach Commodore. The rank where everything changed.
Congratulations to you both, Bakeef said. You can pick up your new insignia and IDs from the quartermaster. You're dismissed, Thrawn. Ziara, another moment of your time.
He waited in silence until Thrawn had left the room.
Your assessment, Senior Captain?
He asked, nodding toward the closed door.
He's brilliant, sir, Ziara said. Excellent strategist and tactician.
And his political shrewdness?
Poor to non-existent.
Agreed,
Bakeef said.
He's going to need a steady hand, both to guide him and to prevent him from continually grabbing the wrong end of the fire stick.
Ziara suppressed a wince.
Do I need to guess, sir?
Hardly,
Bakeef said, smiling tightly.
I'm putting him aboard with you, as your third officer.
He glanced at his Questis.
Your new ship will be the patrol cruiser Paralla.
Yes, sir,
Ziara said, feeling herself straighten up a bit more. Patrol cruisers typically traveled far outside the recognized boundaries of the Ascendancy, gathering intel and watching for potential threats. An interesting and highly coveted assignment.
Thank you, sir.
You've earned it,
Bakeef said.
I know you'll do whatever is necessary for the defense and protection of the Ascendancy.
He drew himself up to full attention.
Dismissed, Senior Captain. And good luck.
She'd expected Thrawn to have already left. Instead, she found him waiting for her outside the General's office.
Trouble?
He asked.
No, she said. I'm commanding the Paralla. And you're my new third officer.
Again, a brief look of surprise.
Really?
Really,
she said, starting down the hallway.
Quartermaster's this way.
He dropped into step beside her.
Congratulations, he said as they walked. The Paralla's reputed to be an excellent ship.
So I've heard, Ciara said. Congratulations to you as well, by the way. Two ranks at once is almost unheard of.
So I've been told, Thrawn said, his voice going distant. Though, of course, what's given can also be taken away.
Ziara leaned forward to peer at his face.
Something wrong?
He looked sideways at her, then turned to face forward again.
The Leoaoan regime didn't go into piracy simply because they were bored, he said. They clearly have a serious financial problem.
You're suggesting we take up a collection?
He shot her another look, this one carrying an edge of annoyance.
They won't try it again with the Ascendancy, he said. But the problem remains, as does their chosen remedy. Once they've regrouped and replaced the ships you destroyed, they'll be back, attacking merchants from other systems. What happens to those systems?
Ciara shrugged.
They'll have to deal with the Leo Aoi on their own.
What if they aren't strong enough to do so?
Thrawn persisted.
Are we supposed to just sit back and watch them suffer?
Ziara looked him straight in the eye.
Yes.
For a moment, they locked gazes. Thrawn turned away first.
Because we don't interfere in the affairs of others.
Would you rather the Ascendancy became guardians for the entire chaos?
Ziara asked.
Because that's where the path would take us. We would rescue one, then another, then a third, until finally we stood alone as bulwark against 1,000 different aggressors. Is that what you think we should do?
No, of course not, he said. But there has to be a middle path.
For a few steps, they walked in silence.
If it helps, I understand what you're saying, Ziara said at last. Tell you what, when you rise to rule the aristocracy and the ascendancy, I'll help you work out a solution.
Thrawn gave a little snort.
There's no need to be sarcastic.
Who says that was sarcasm? Ziara asked. The Myth are an important family. And as General Barkeef said, you're riding high in their estimation. The point is that non-intervention is the Ascendancy's protocol at the moment. Unless or until that changes, we accept our orders and fulfill our duties.
She caught his arm, bringing him to a sudden stop, and gazed hard into his face.
And that's all we do.
Understood? A small smile touched his lips.
Of course, Senior Captain Ziara.
And don't worry that your family's influence was what jumped you those ranks, she continued. Don't deny it. I saw it in your face. I'm sure the Myth connection didn't hurt, but the Council doesn't do things just because some syndic wants them to. If they did, I'd have been jumped 3 ranks.
And you'd have deserved it, Thrawn said.
Ziara started to smile. The smile faded as she realized he was serious.
Hardly.
I disagree.
Thrawn seemed to consider that.
I respectfully disagree,
he amended.
You'll certainly make full admiral someday. The Council might as well promote you now and save themselves some time.
I appreciate your confidence,
Ziara said, turning away and starting to walk again.
But I'm content to take the slow, steady route.
Admiral. Actually, the word had a nice ring to it. Provided, of course, that she was as good as Thrawn seemed to think. And provided that, while he served under her command, he didn't do something to ruin her chances forever. Chapter 10. The hatch into Admiral Aurelani's office slid open. Bracing herself, wondering what this sudden summons was all about, Thalia stepped inside.
You wanted to see me, Senior Captain?
She said.
Yes,
Thrawn replied.
Come in, please. I want to show you something.
Thalias took another step forward, hearing the hatch slide closed behind her, and looked around. Given Thrawn's reputation, or perhaps his notoriety with artwork, she'd expected to find the office filled with holograms of Garwian sculptures and paintings. To her mild surprise, she instead found him surrounded by a three-dimensional map filled with stars and star routes.
"Here's the Ascendancy," he said, waving a finger through a familiar cluster of stars just off-center on the map. "Here's the Leoaoan regime."
He pointed to a much smaller group of stars to the north zenith of the Ascendancy.
"Here's Rapak."
He shifted the finger a little way east nadir.
"Here's Urch."
A little more east nadir, and a bit to the south.
"And here are the Protartis worlds."
He shifted his finger one final time to a spot on the Ascendancy's southeast zenith border.
"What do you see?"
"The first three are north and northeast of us," Thalias said,
wondering why he'd brought in the Patatas. They were far away from all the others he'd mentioned, and besides, they'd already been dealt with.
"Indeed," Thrawn said. "Three different nations under Nicardune attack or besiegement. All three on the edges of the Ascendancy."
Thalias wrinkled her nose. They weren't that close, really. Certainly not close enough to be a threat.
"So far, none of the Nicardune conquests is encroaching directly on the Ascendancy," Thrawn said,
as if he'd read her mind and her silent objection.
"But the pattern is troubling. If Yiv is targeting us, this is the ideal way for him to begin."
"All right," Thalias said cautiously. "But if he attacks, can't we deal with him like we did the Patatas?"
"Interesting that you mention the Patatas," Thrawn said. "Their artwork and entire culture strongly implies that the defeat Admiral Arilani delivered to them should have ended any resistance to us for the rest of this generation. Yet reports from Naporar indicate they may be rearming for another attack. I suggest that they too may be under Yiv's influence and control."
Thalias looked at the map again, and if that was true, it was no longer just the Nicardune working their way across the chaos, with the Ascendancy in their path purely by coincidence. If they'd also conquered or suborned the Patatas, there was a good chance they were deliberately encircling the Chiss. It was as if Yiv was raising the whole of the chaos against them.
"What can we do?"
"As I told the Admiral, we need more information," Thrawn said. "I've spent the past hour studying the map, and there are four other nations in particular whose current status I believe may be revealing. I'm hoping I can persuade the Garwians to take me to one of them under a suitable pretext."
"That sounds extremely dangerous," Thalias said.
"Dangerous, perhaps," Thrawn said, "but not extremely so. The Garwians, let's just say, they owe me for past events."
Thalias made a face. She'd heard a little about those events, and they weren't counted as being among the Ascendancy's finest moments.
"Have you cleared this with the Admiral?"
"I have." Thrawn smiled faintly. "I can't say she's enthusiastic about the plan, but she's willing to go along with it."
In other words, happy with the plan or not, Arilani was willing to stick her neck beneath the blade alongside Thrawn's.
"I see. I assume I'm here because you want something from me, too?"
"Very good," Thrawn said. "Yes, I'd like you to accompany me on this expedition."
Thalias had sort of guessed that was where this conversation would eventually end up. Her mind flicked back to her deal with Syndic Thurfian.
"As an additional observer, I assume?"
Yes. He paused. And as my family hostage.
Thalias felt her eyes go wide.
As your... what?
My family hostage, Thrawn repeated.
Which is what?
Thrawn pursed his lips.
In certain circumstances, the rivalry between Chiss families is strong enough that they agree to exchange hostages. One member from each side is rematched as a marriage adoptive, and that person serves under another family member as servant and hostage. Should hostilities break out between the families, the hostages know they will be immediately killed.
Thalias stared at him.
I've never even heard of that.
Of course not.
Thrawn gave her a small smile.
Because I just made it up.
She shook her head.
All right, I'm lost.
It's very simple,
Thrawn said quietly.
I expect the Nicardune to know a great deal about the ascendancy and Chiss culture. To defeat an enemy, you must know them, and they are clearly expert conquerors.
He stopped, an expectant expression on his face. Thalias made a face, playing teacher, just as he had on the Pakosh mining station, waiting for her to come up with the right answer. But at least this time, that answer was obvious.
So, if they suddenly learn there's something they don't know about us, something really important, they might decide they need to rethink their whole strategy?
Exactly, Thrawn said. At best, it may cause Yiv to abandon his plans against us. At worst, it should buy us some time.
He raised his eyebrows.
The question is whether you're willing and able to play such a role.
The obvious answer, yes, rose quickly into Thalias' throat.
But even as she opened her mouth to say the word, she realized it wasn't nearly that easy.
She had no idea how a hostage spoke and behaved and thought. Probably there would be some hesitation, some low-level but constant fear for her life. Possibly a degree of eagerness to please the one who held her life in his hands. Could she pull all of that off in a believable way? More than that, going with Thrawn would mean leaving Ciri alone aboard the Vigilant. Certainly the girl could handle a trip back to the Ascendancy on her own. It wasn't like Ar'alani couldn't assign one of her officers to take care of their Skywalker for a few days.
But Ciri had lost so many other caregivers over her time in the fleet. Would she see Thalias' departure as yet another abandonment? No matter how good or necessary the cause?
Thalias could explain the situation before she left, but that didn't necessarily mean Ciri would hear or understand.
Where exactly did Thalias' true duty and commitment lie? She looked at the map, at the clusters of enemy stars closing in around the Ascendancy. Suddenly, her own uncertainties, comfort, and self-respect didn't seem nearly so important anymore. As for Ciri, Thalias could only do her best to explain it to the girl. I don't know how to be a hostage, she said, turning back to Thrawn. But I'm ready to learn.
Thrawn inclined his head to her.
Thank you,
he said. Stepping to the desk, he touched a key.
Admiral, this is Thrawn. Caregiver Thalias has agreed to accompany me. Can you inform Skywalker Ciri and make arrangements for someone to take over her care when we reach Solitaire?
I'd like to tell her myself,
Thalias put in.
It might be easier coming from me.
That's reasonable,
Ar'alani said.
Do you have someone you'd recommend to take your place?
Thalias hesitated. Most of her time aboard the Vigilant had been spent with Ciri or on the bridge. Who did she know well enough to entrust with such a responsibility? Especially since it needed to be someone of stature and respect if the girl wasn't going to see this as Thalias handing her off to the first person she ran into along the corridor. Really, There was only one person who fit both criteria.
Yes,
she hedged.
May I think about it a little longer?
Of course,
Aralani said.
Chiri should be finished with this run in half an hour. I want you on the bridge at that time with your recommendation.
Yes, Admiral.
I'll see you then. Aralani out.
Thrawn keyed off. Do you know who you'll ask to take care of her? He asked as Thalias headed toward the hatch.
Yes,
she said over her shoulder.
But I'm not sure the Admiral will approve.
The Admiral, Aralani thought sourly, very much didn't approve. But she'd agreed that Thalias could choose Chiri's caregiver, and she was bound by personal honor to follow through on that promise. Besides which, Thalias' arguments and reasoning made sense. Chiri was curled up in one of the oversized chairs, right where Aralani had left her when the signal and Thrawn's instructions finally arrived from the surface. I'm back, she announced cheerfully as she crossed the suite toward the girl.
Did you get some sleep? Are you hungry?
I'm okay,
Chiri said, her voice soft and weary. Aralani frowned, studying the girl's face. When she was Chiri's age, she remembered a tendency to go all dramatic when she wanted something, or felt she was being treated unfairly, or just felt like getting some attention. But there was something in Chiri's expression that told her none of those were the case here.
Are you upset that Thalias left you?
Chiri's lip twitched, enough to show that Aralani had hit the mark.
She said she had to go,
she muttered.
She wouldn't tell me why.
Aralani nodded.
Yes, that always drove me crazy, too.
Chiri looked up, frowning.
You were a Skywalker?
No, but I was once 10, Aralani said. Grown-ups were always whispering and keeping secrets. I hated that. But sometimes it's necessary.
Chiri lowered her gaze.
She's going into danger, isn't she? Captain Thrawn's taking her, and they're going into danger.
Oh, there's danger everywhere, Aralani said, trying to sound casual. It's not a big deal.
It was, she realized too late, the exact wrong thing to say. Suddenly, without warning, Chiri's eyes welled up with tears, and she buried her face in her hands.
She's going to die.
She gasped between sobs that shook her whole body.
She's going to die.
No,
Aralani protested, hurrying forward and dropping to one knee beside the frightened girl.
No, she's going to be fine. Thrawn's there, too, and he won't let anything bad happen to her.
It's my fault,
Chiri moaned.
It's my fault. I yelled at her, and now she's going to die.
Easy, Aralani soothed. It's okay. When did you yell at her?
But even as she asked the question, the obvious answer popped into her mind. The long farewell and explanations that had taken place in the privacy of the Skywalker suite. Thalias' manner and posture as she and Thrawn had headed to the shuttle. A manner, which Aralani noted at the time, seemed unusually subdued, even given the gravity of the upcoming mission. Chiri's refusal to come out of her sleeping room when Aralani first came to the suite to check on her after the shuttle left. Aralani had put it down to nerves on both Skywalker's and caregiver's parts. Apparently, however, their farewells had been a lot more fiery than she'd realized. And now the girl had worked through her anger and tumbled off the other direction into fear and depression and guilt.
It's okay,
Aralani said again.
People yell at each other all the time.
It doesn't mean they don't care for each other.
But I told her I hated her,
Chiri sobbed.
She's not going to die,
Aralani said firmly, gingerly resting her hand on Chiri's shoulder.
Saying something doesn't make it happen.
I didn't mean to yell,
Chiri sniffed. The crying faded a little as she lowered her hands.
I just wanted some graph markers so I could draw. But she said she didn't have any and couldn't get any before she left. And I said Avik has them and that she was a terrible momish.
She covered her face again and the sobbing resumed. Aralani patted her shoulder gently, feeling like a fresh recruit on her first training mission. She would take a battle against multiple enemies any day over trying to soothe a terrified child.
Listen to me, she said, wincing at the command tone of her voice. Listen to me,
she tried again, this time trying for gentleness.
This isn't like books or vids. This is real life. Just because someone goes off on a mission right after they've had a fight doesn't mean they're going to die.
Chiri didn't answer, but Aralani thought she was crying a little less hard.
Tell you what, she said. I'll draw you a hot bath. Thalia said you like those. And while you're soaking, I'll make whatever you want to eat. How does that sound?
Okay,
Chiri said.
Okay, Aralani repeated. I'll go start the bath while you figure out what you want.
Chiri nodded.
Admiral Aralani, Thalia said you've done a lot of things with Captain Thrawn.
I've had my fair share of experience with him,
Aralani said, smiling wryly.
And Thaddeus is right. Being with Thrawn is one of the safest places she can be.
Can you tell me about some of the stories?
Chiri asked hesitantly.
She gave me some, but they're all official and stiff, and I don't read very well. Thalius likes to read, but I can't.
Without warning, the body-racking sobs were back. Aralani closed her eyes and let out a silent sigh. This was going to be a long, long night. The Garweans had been reasonably quick to allow the shuttle to land. They were equally quick to order it to leave, citing security concerns about an obvious Chiss craft sitting on the ground and promising that the petitioners would be seen quickly. But as Thalius and Thrawn continued to wait in the security office anteroom, she began to wonder if they had changed their minds. Certainly no one in the Unity seemed eager or even willing to talk to them. Thrawn had said that the Garweans owed him a favor, but from the way the people bustling around the office seemed to be avoiding eye contact, Thalius was having serious doubts about the depths of any such gratitude. She was also having second thoughts about the thick, plaster-like makeup Thrawn had decided should be a proper part of her appearance. She understood the logic of making a family hostage's status instantly apparent to passers-by. But with much of her face seemingly covered by textured ridges and plateaus, she could hardly form any expressions at all. Which, again, might be part of the whole point of such makeup. Hostages as non-entities or some such. Still, as she sat there in silence and expressionless, feeling the extra weight of the plaster pressing down on her neck and shoulders, she couldn't help wondering what the long-term effects of the stuff might be on her skin. Finally, 4 hours after their arrival, one of the Garweans finally stopped in front of them.
Second Defense Overlord Frangelic will see you now,
he said in Minisiat.
Follow me, please.
The Garwian seated behind the desk as they were ushered in was younger than Thalias had expected for what sounded like such a prestigious post. He sat motionless and silent as they walked up to the two guest chairs facing the desk and sat down. Looking over Thalias' shoulder, the alien nodded to their guide, and she heard the door shut behind him.
"I see you've risen in your profession, Second Defense Overlord," Thrawn said calmly. "Congratulations."
"As you have likewise, Senior Captain Thrawn,"
Frangelic said, inclining his head.
"And your companion?"
"My hostage," Thrawn corrected.
Frangelic seemed to draw back in his chair.
"Since when do the Kiss keep hostages?"
"Since long before we took to the stars," Thrawn said. "It's sometimes invoked as a security matter between families. We rarely speak of it openly to strangers, but since she is here, you must be brought into my confidence. I trust you'll keep it a private matter."
"Of course. Has she a name?"
Thrawn looked at Thalias as if he was trying to remember it.
"Thalias."
"Thalias?"
Frangelic greeted her gravely. He studied her a moment, his eyes seeming to trace some of the spirals and ridges of the makeup curling around her face, then returned his attention to Thrawn.
"Let me be clear from the outset. The Ruleri have met in special session over the past hour. They have informed me that their feelings are mixed concerning your return to Solitaire. They feel your last interaction with the Garwian people, the word betrayal wasn't actually spoken, but the thoughts and attitudes tended in that direction."
"I remember things differently," Thrawn said. "But that is the past. Right now, both the Ascendancy and the Unity face an uncertain and dangerous future. I bring a proposal that aims to address both problems."
"Interesting."
Frangelic eyed him.
"Continue."
"I believe we both face a new enemy, called the Nicardune," Thrawn said.
Keying his questus, he handed it across the desk.
"We know of 3, possibly 4, nations in the region that have either been quietly conquered or are currently under siege."
"We know these nations,"
Frangelic said, studying the questus.
"As well as 2 others that seem to have drastically changed both their governments and their attitudes toward outsiders."
"So you agree there is a threat?"
"We agree something has changed,"
Frangelic said.
"The Ruleri are divided on whether or not the changes constitute a threat."
"What do you think?"
Frangelic hesitated.
"I think the situation needs to be studied further," he said. "I assume your proposal is along those lines."
"It is," Thrawn said. "You see listed there 4 nations that I believe may hold useful information. Any Nicardune in those areas would be instantly aware of a Chiss presence, which precludes me from investigating in any official manner. My hope, therefore, is that I can travel unknown and unacknowledged to one of those nations aboard a Garwian ship."
Frangelic's jaws opened wide, briefly revealing rows of sharp teeth before his lips closed over them, hiding them from sight. The Garwian version of a smile, Thalias remembered reading.
"I find it hard to believe a Chiss aboard one of our ships could truly be unacknowledged," he said. "However, as it happens, the Ruleri have a diplomatic mission leaving in 2 days for one of those on your list, the Vak homeworld of Primea."
"That would be perfect," Thrawn said. "Can you get me aboard?"
I can try.
Frangelic's eyes flicked to Thalias.
And your hostage too, I presume.
Of course. Though, from this point onward, please refer to her only as my companion, especially in public.
Of course.
Frangelic looked back at the Questus.
The Ruleri will never let you travel without a security escort,
he continued, as if talking to himself.
Unfortunately, none of my subordinates will understand you or your methods.
He looked up and gave another smile.
Nor will they remember you the way I do.
He hesitated, then pushed the Questus back toward Thrawn.
So if you're to go to Primea, then it follows I must as well. I'll speak to the envoy commanding the mission and make the arrangements.
Thank you, Thrawn said. You will need to explain the presence of a Chiss aboard a Garwian mission. I propose you identify me as an interstellar art expert, whom your academics invited to participate in order to study Vak artworks.
Seems a bit far-fetched,
Frangelic said doubtfully.
Not at all, Thrawn said. There are theories in the academic world that the Vaks and Garwians were in contact 20 to 30,000 years ago. Finding indications of such contact, perhaps in overlapping artistic styles or subjects, would help confirm those theories and possibly allow historians to track the path of hyperspace travel through this part of the chaos.
Interesting,
Frangelic said.
Is any of that real, or did you just make it up?
The theories are completely real, Thrawn assured him. Somewhat obscure and hotly debated, but someone on Primea will be able to locate records of them if inquiries are made.
I hope you're right,
Frangelic said.
Very well. I'll have my aide find you quarters. Then I'll see about getting us passage on the diplomatic ship.
Thank you, Thrawn said, standing up. I'll need to send the details to Admiral Arulani before she can take the Vigilant out of orbit. Oh, and may I also ask you to bring a medium-sized shipping container aboard the ship?
A shipping container?
Frangelic echoed, his voice suddenly suspicious.
How much are you planning to bring with you?
Actually, very little, Thrawn assured him. The container is for our return.
Very well,
Frangelic said, still sounding suspicious.
Perhaps you will explain further before our departure.
Or during the voyage, Thrawn said. We shall see which works best.
We shall,
Frangelic said.
In the meantime, send your message to your admiral. As quickly as possible,
he added, his tone going a bit brittle.
The Ruleri are quite capable of ignoring people and things that are distasteful to them. But it wouldn't be wise to test the breaking point of that ability.
I understand, Thrawn said. As soon as I have the details of the mission, the Vigilant will be gone. In the meantime, companion, come. While I speak with the Admiral, you can go to your quarters and prepare our dinner.
Memories 8.
After all her months aboard the Perala, Ziara had developed a sensitivity to every nuance and subtle movement of her ship, its engines, and its general feel. What was happening right now was about as unsubtle as it got. She was 5 steps behind mid-Captain Roscoe as both she and the First Officer closed on the bridge. Roscoe got there first and ducked through the hatchway.
Thrawn! What in hell's name are you doing?
She snarled, her voice echoing out into the corridor. Scowling, Ziara followed her through the hatchway, And so began another wonderful day aboard the Parala. But this time it was instantly clear that it wasn't just Roscoe verbally bludgeoning a more junior officer from a rival family. The overnight bridge crew was sitting stiffly at their posts as Thrawn stood behind the Skywalker and pilot, his hands clasped behind his back, the swirl of hyperspace washing around the viewport. A quick visual sweep of the status boards showed that he'd brought the ship's weapons and electrostatic barrier to full readiness just one step below battle stations.
"I ask you a question, Senior Commander," Roscoe bit out as she strode toward him.
"As you were, mid-captain," Ziara called firmly.
"Status, Senior Commander."
"We've picked up an urgent distress call from the Garwin colony world Stivik," Thrawn said. "Security Officer Frangelic says they're under attack." He half turned to throw a significant look at Ziara.
"By pirates."
"You know the protocol,"
Ziara said as she strode past the glowering Roscoe toward Thrawn, her stomach tightening. It was painfully obvious what Thrawn suspected, and he was probably right. The Garwian worlds were centers of commerce for a number of local species, and Stivik in particular was within easy strike range of the Leoaoan regime. She stopped at his side.
"You know we can't do this," she said, keeping her voice low. "The protocols forbid intervention."
"I'm hoping direct action won't be necessary."
Ziara looked down at the 9-year-old girl in the Skywalker's chair, her hands moving almost of their own accord as she and her third sight guided the Parala through the twisting pathways of hyperspace.
"A bluff?"
"Perhaps not even that much," Thrawn said. "The sudden appearance of a Chiss warship may be enough to frighten them away."
"And if it isn't?"
His lips compressed.
"Then we do nothing."
"That's right,"
Ziara said. She raised her voice.
"All crew, battle stations. Bridge, prepare to exit hyperspace."
10 seconds later, the sky changed. The star flares collapsed, and they had arrived. At the edge of a horrendous battle. Ziara felt a knot form in the pit of her stomach. 2 Garwian patrol ships were standing gamely against 3 larger attackers, trying to keep them away from the big orbiting merchant hub station. Nearby, a 4th attacker and a small freighter drifted together, wrapped in a lock dock, the pirates presumably busily plundering their prey. A handful of other merchant ships were driving frantically for the safety of hyperspace.
"Security Officer Frangelic acknowledges our arrival,"
the comm officer reported.
"He requests assistance."
Ziara sighed, but there was nothing for it.
"Do not respond,"
she ordered.
"Repeat, do not respond."
"A pity,"
Roscoe commented, coming up behind Ziara and Thrawn.
"There were a couple of nice cafes on that hub. May I remind the captain that there's no reason for us to be here?"
"So noted," Ziara said. "Run a check on the electrostatic barrier. I want to be ready in case we're attacked."
Roscoe was silent a moment, just long enough to show her displeasure and suspicion, just short enough to avoid an insubordination charge.
"Yes, Senior Captain," she said.
Turning away, she crossed to the defense station.
"She's right," Ziara said. "This is a military situation between 2 groups of aliens. Happens all the time out here. Nothing for us to get involved with."
She nodded toward the viewport.
"As for your perceived threat, I'm not sure the attackers have even noticed us."
"They've noticed," Thrawn said. 2 of the 3 attackers have repositioned to allow for quick disengagement. And the freighter locked one has begun a slow rotation to align his main batteries with us."
He shook his head slowly.
"I can beat them, Ziara." I can take all four right now without any serious damage to the Barala.
Serious is a highly relative term,
Ciara pointed out.
Even if you can, we have no justification. Chiss territory hasn't been invaded, and we haven't been attacked.
If we move closer, we might be.
Deliberate provocation is also disallowed.
Again, Thrawn shook his head. I can see it all, he said, his voice strained.
Their tactics, their patterns, their weaknesses. I could tell you right here, right now, how to beat them.
Even at 4-1 odds?
The odds don't matter, Thrawn said. I've studied Leo Aeon art since our first encounter with the pirates. I know their tactics and their battle patterns. I know how they utilize their weapons and defenses, and how they take advantage of an enemy's mistakes.
He turned, and Ciara was struck by the intensity of his expression.
No damage, he said softly. No damage.
Ciara turned away from that look to gaze again out the viewport.
No damage, except the ruin of his career, and hers if she gave him permission. People were fighting and dying out there. True, they were aliens, but Chiss merchants had traded with them and found them to be reasonable enough people.
Even the Garweans who didn't die today, those in the hub station for instance, would have their lives irrevocably changed. The Parala could cut short that destruction, possibly ensure that the Leo Aoi would never return. At the cost of her career. It still wasn't too late, she knew. If the rest of the bridge crew could be persuaded to keep quiet. But of course they wouldn't. Not with family politics and rivalries coloring everything they did.
Unless there was nothing for them to talk about.
You say you could tell me how to defeat them?
She murmured, still gazing out at the battle.
Could you tell anyone?
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the subtle shift in his stance.
Yes, he said.
May I remind the captain that the ranging lasers haven't been checked recently for calibration?
I believe you're right,
she said. Not that the low-power ranging lasers, which gathered distance and velocity data during combat, ever went out of calibration in the first place.
Request permission to go to the secondary command and run a check.
Ciara swallowed hard.
Her career...
Permission granted, she said. While you're there, you'd best make sure all other systems are likewise at battle readiness.
Yes, Captain.
With a whisper of displaced air, he turned and headed to the hatchway. Rosku returned to Ziara's side.
Getting him off the bridge, I hope,
she asked.
I sent him to check the weapon sensor systems,
Ziara said. Rosku snorted.
And you don't think he'll be tempted to use them? Because I wouldn't put that past him. Senior Commander Thrawn understands the protocols. Does he?
Rosku countered.
I wouldn't have responded to an alien's distress call if I'd had deck officer duty. I dare say neither would you, Captain.
Perhaps not, Ciara said.
On the other hand, if the battle had been over when we arrived, we are permitted to render humanitarian aid. But the battle isn't over!
Rosku paused, and Ciara could feel her gaze.
I assume he relinquished his deck officer position when he left the bridge.
In other words, with Ciara now back in full command, why was the Parala still here?
These pirates appear to be part of the same group I engaged last year off Kinos,
she told Rosku.
I want to watch their attack and see if they've come up with any new weapons or tactics we should be aware of.
But we're not going to intervene, Roscoe pressed.
Do you feel a need to quote the protocols to me?
Ciara asked mildly.
No, of course not,
Roscoe said, her tone more subdued.
My apologies, Captain.
Captain, the operations officer called from his station. I'm getting activity on the ranging lasers.
It's all right,
Ciara said.
I'm having the calibration checked.
Understood, the officer said, sounding puzzled. Did you also order the frequencies to be modulated?
Modulated how?
Roscoe asked, frowning.
Just modulated, the other said. No particular pattern I can see.
He's probably running them through their full range,
Ciara said, focusing on the battle. The Garwian patrol ships were moving off their stand and fight positions, shifting to a sort of corkscrewing over-under flanking move against the three pirates. The pirates turned in response, pitching up and down to bring their weapons to bear. Only they turned too far, overcompensating and exposing their ventral sides to the Garwians. The defenders opened fire. Quick, precise bursts of spectrum laser blasts at the attackers' exposed bellies.
Multiple hits!
Senior Commander Oak Pior snapped from the sensor station.
Pirates' ventral weapons launchers breached, venting to space!
And abruptly, both of the targeted pirate ships erupted in fiery blasts as their missile banks exploded. The third attacker, which had been beginning its own turn, jerked violently as it tried to get clear of the high-speed debris. It had managed to avoid the worst of it when one of the Garwian ships swooped inside its defenses and delivered a devastating salvo. The Garwian barely made it clear before its target suffered its own crippling blast. Roscoe muttered something under her breath.
I'll be cursed, she said. That was... How in hell's name did they pull that off? Pirates disengaging,
Oak Pior reported.
Spinning up their hyperdrives.
Acknowledged, Ciara said.
The three crippled ships were angling toward deep space, trying to get away before the Garwians pressed their attack. The fourth pirate had taken the hint, releasing the freighter it had been looting and similarly running for its life. That fourth ship made it to the safety of hyperspace. None of its companions did. Ciara took a deep breath.
And now, I believe, we can leave. Helm set course back to our patrol circuit.
She turned to Roscoe.
I trust you're relieved, Mid-Captain Roscoe, she added.
Roscoe was still staring out at the remnants of the battle, a disbelieving expression on her face.
Relieved, Captain? She asked mechanically.
Those cafes you mentioned, Ciara said. Looks like they're still in business.
Chapter 11. Thalias had never been on an alien ship before. No real surprise there. Most of the travel she'd done outside the Ascendancy had been while she was a Skywalker, and the Sindicure wasn't about to let such a valuable resource stray outside of Chiss control. But she had been on ships that hosted aliens from the Navigators Guild, usually diplomatic or military vessels that wanted to maintain the illusion that the Chiss had no navigators of their own, but also didn't want to be at the mercy of those aliens if quick travel became necessary. She'd asked one of the senior officers once what would happen if the regular Skywalker had to take over navigation and the alien navigator learned the Ascendancy's secret. The answer had been vague, but there'd been a coldness in the officer's eyes that had kept her from ever asking again. But just because the aliens couldn't be allowed to see her didn't mean she wasn't allowed to see them. On most of those trips, the ship's commander was happy to let her watch one of the bridge monitor view screens, just to see how other navigators did things. It was never as exciting as she expected.
Mostly, the navigators just sat there, sometimes with their eyes closed, sometimes with them wide open, occasionally twitching the controls as something loomed ahead that the ship had to avoid. It was a long time before she realized that her own Skywalker performance was probably just as dull to watch as theirs. But here, on a Garwian ship, with her identity and former status of no interest to anyone, she might have a chance to actually observe the navigator up close. Maybe see if there was enough left of her third sight to sense what he or she was actually doing. That was fiercely unlikely, of course. In fact, the chances were virtually zero. Third sight always left a Skywalker by age 14 or 15, and those years were far in Thalias's past. Still, as far as she knew, no one had ever tried putting a former Skywalker next to a functioning alien navigator. That alone made it worth trying. As Thrawn had once told her, negative information was still information. The nighttime bridge crew turned out to be even smaller than the equivalent aboard Chiss ships. Just three Garwians, plus of course the navigator. One of the Garwians, presumably the officer in charge, looked up as Thalias came through the hatch.
"What are you doing here, Chiss?"
she challenged.
"I am companion to Artistic Master Sforno,"
Thalias said, bowing low and keeping her shoulders hunched. She and Thrawn had discussed just how much they wanted to broadcast her supposed hostage identity. Too little, and the Nicardoon might not hear about it. Too much, and the fact it was allegedly a Chiss cultural secret could start unraveling. Their decision was for her to call herself a companion, but at the same time present the stance and manner of someone whose life was held in another's hands. A role that was proving disturbingly easy to settle into.
"He asked me to note and memorize the artistic tattoos on our navigator's face."
"Your master is ill-informed," the Garwian said tartly. "It's the Vector One navigators who have tattoos. We fly today with a Pathfinder."
"They have no tattoos?"
Thalias asked, frowning.
"Are you certain?"
The officer waved toward the figure in the navigator's seat.
"See for yourself."
Hiding a smile, Thalias crossed to the board, focusing on the figure as she stretched out with all her senses. She caught a whiff of something spicy. Somehow, none of the materials she'd read on Pathfinders had mentioned that they had a distinctive odor. But there was nothing else. She kept at it, coming right up behind him. Still nothing. Negative information. Still, it had been worth a try. She stepped around the side of the chair, remembering she was supposed to confirm Pathfinders didn't tattoo their faces. It was all she could do to keep from gasping with surprise and horror. The alien sitting there, the facial contours, the shape of the cheek winglets, the flow pattern of the bristles above his eyes. She'd seen this one before. In fact...
"I told you,"
the Garwian said, her tone a mix of satisfaction and contempt. Thalias nodded, searching for her voice as she took one final, painfully careful look. There was no doubt.
"You were right,"
she agreed. She stepped away from the chair and bowed again to the Garwian.
"My apologies for the intrusion."
Thrawn was in the study section of their suite when she returned.
"We have trouble,"
she said without preamble. He set down his Questus, his eyes steady on her.
"Explain. You remember that Pathfinder you hired for the Springhawks raid on Rapak?"
Thalias asked.
"Of course. Kilori of Yuan Duolin."
"Right," Thalias said. "He's on the bridge, right now."
Thrawn raised an eyebrow.
"Is he now?"
"That's all?" Thalias demanded. "Is he now? Seems to me a situation like this calls for a stronger response than just, is he now?"
What would you suggest we do?
Thrawn asked calmly.
Ask Frangelic to stop the ship so we can get off. Urge him to imprison Kilori the minute we leave hyperspace, possibly resulting in a boycott of the Garwian Unity by the entire Navigators Guild.
No, of course not,
Thalias ground out. She hated when people went immediately to worst-case scenarios.
What if he sees us? Or rather, what if he sees you? What if the Nicardoon are on Primea? Because they're already out for your blood. A casual word or slip of the tongue from Kilori, and we'll be running for our lives.
Perhaps,